Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Well, you're stuck with just me for the hour, no guest. And as I've been reading through my reader emails, what people seem to like the best is when I talk about under-the-radar careers. So ever the pleaser, I will do that. But I first would like to invite you to call. If you or someone you love has got a work problem, and that can be at any stage in your life, whether you're 16 or 76, starting out in your career, mid-career, end career, whether you're at the so-called bottom of the socioeconomic rung, that is minimum wage, or you're a CEO of a tech company or a college, I do invite you to call with whatever conundrum, career conundrum, is besetting you. I can usually be of some help in doing what I call a three-minute workover, which can range from 1 minute to 10 minutes, but the focus is not on the time. The focus is on you. So if you or someone you love could use a little help, the price is certainly right. Zero. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And as promised, let's say, while I'm waiting for the calls, I'm going to share some under-the-radar careers. Not in any particular order. I've just kind of assembled them in preparation for this show. And the first one is one that I don't like in a way, because it's considered one of the most stressful careers. But some people get off on that, and it works really well for them. It is air traffic controller. The job market is always good. The training programs are, report at least, that almost every graduate is someone who gets hired right away after finishing training, and six-figure income is very common. So we will do more careers in a moment, but calls are in. So let's go right to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to ask a question. When you are writing a cover letter and they ask for your salary requirements, mm-hmm. and you really don't know what is appropriate, how should you approach that?
Yeah, I don't think it's really fair of them to. That's a game that puts you at an enormous disadvantage if you put that there. And they're kind of, at this point, they know that many people won't answer. It doesn't hurt for them to ask, because they figure, well, if you ask, great. But I would say something, any one of the following is fine. Maybe just ignoring it completely and not addressing it in the letter, or saying this is give a wide range, you know, X dollars from $80,000 to $100,000, depending upon the nature of the position, so that you're not hurting yourself at all. I think either of those is fine, or some people have advocated, and I'm not sure, it seems a little techniquey to me. Let's defer that conversation. I'm sure that if we both decide that we would like to work together, then I'm sure we'll come to agreement. Now, if the form says it's required, you got to do it, whatever, I still think that in general, that's, you know, or you could write something like, if it's on a formal form, we'll discuss. Anything like that, but I think it is unfair of them to ask you to use a number, because that could cost you tens of thousands of dollars. And yes, there's always some chance that they will say, how dare that person not follow instructions, and toss your application. But when day is done, using one or more of those strategies that feels right in that moment is more likely to help you prevail.
Just one quick follow-up question. Should I make any, if I do decide to try to answer it in some way, should I make any reference to my current salary, or just... It's a similar sort of job.
I think I would keep it in that letter. I would not use... What that does is it pins everything based on your previous salary.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably say something like, I don't think there's any reason to really say what you have been paid in the past. What seems to be fair market value, you know, what seems fair to me would be this range, if you're going to give a range. Fairness is always a word that's good, or appropriate. You know, the problem is, you know, if you give too low an offer, you know, then you cost yourself tens of thousands of dollars. You give too high an offer saying, I want this, they may eliminate you immediately without giving you a chance. That's why all these kind of dilatory tactics are appropriate, and they're moral and ethical, because they're playing game with you. They're the ones who are offering you a job. They're the ones who should say what the position pays. They're playing, you know, kind of bargainer, like, and that's not really good. And that's why I suggest using one or more of those strategies.
Okay, thank a lot.
Thanks a lot for the call. Let's go back to the phones, but let me give out the phone number again. If you or someone you love has a work-related question, tactical like that, strategic in terms of what the hell you should be doing when you grow up, even if you're already grown up, any question related to work, or even indirectly related to work, is fair game. The phone number here for a three-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello, it's you.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I am in a rut. I have been out of work for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I'm a teacher by training. I lost my job at a private school where I had taught for about 12 years. Mm-hmm. I'm in my late 40s. Mm-hmm. I do have a master's degree in education, arts education, however. I don't have a teaching credential.
I'm sorry, what kind of education? I didn't hear that.
My focus was arts.
Arts education. Got it.
And I ended up sort of, when I was in grad school, my focus was more nonprofit, the arts. But then I ended up, after substitute teaching for a while, I really enjoyed my interaction with the students, and I ended up becoming a classroom teacher. But that was really not my initial goal.
Mm-hmm. And is your... go ahead. Please, you go ahead.
So now I'm in this situation where I don't know what to do because I don't want to go back into the classroom at all. Mm. And trying to figure out, do I stay in the field of education? And if so, do I just become my own, start a private tutoring type business, which I don't think would be very profitable necessarily? Or do I need to completely reinvent myself? And if so, I'm in really, really unclear.
Okay, I'll do what I can to help. So what is the, if the goddess were looking down upon you, what would the goddess say is the real reason you don't want to be back in the classroom?
Stressful, just politics, just the education system in this country. I'm just very discouraged about it, and I don't feel like I can really make a difference. I felt closed in, and I didn't feel I had a lot of... I just felt trapped in that situation after a while.
Was it curricular? In other words, you would have liked to do X and they're making you do Y? Is it
that's
that
part of it.
The kids are too, were too diverse in not racially, but so diverse in ability that it was impossible to teach them all in one class, but it was a private school? What was the real deal? Because that could give us real good clues.
Sure. I would say a little bit of all of the above. A disconnect with the administration, the philosophical disconnect, not being able to really be myself, being told that really the bottom line, it's bottom line, that's really the most important, and even your job is to really please the parents, give the parents what they want, and so feeling a sense of not really being able to really express and get behind my passion and feel supported in my passion.
Was your passion? What were the kind of lessons that you would have wanted to do that they didn't want you to do?
Well, I guess philosophically, I should probably be teaching in Finland or some other place where, I have a very different approach. My beliefs are I believe in more of a progressive approach to education and a more, collaborative. I was working in a very conservative, book-based. The curriculum was just basically, limited.
Okay. So, but that's what's interesting is if that were really the core problem, what people would normally do is there's a ton of quote progressive schools in the Bay Area, zillions
sure.
of them. But you're saying you want to get out of the classroom, so that's why I'm digging deeper and
right.
making me wonder. There's really something else going on at the root. That's why I invoked the goddess. What's really at the root of all this?
I think I'm trying to figure out how to express how to use my creative. I think there's an artist in me.
Right, you're an artist.
That doesn't really know how to where to start.
Okay, so let's again. I want to understand you as a human being, the foundation. Mm-hmm. So, if I said you were before you died, there was only one arts related project you could do, and you didn't care what anybody said. It was really the quintessential expression of who you are. What would that art project be?
I don't really know.
Would it be, let's start, would it be a painting? Would it be a sculpture? Would it be a poem? Would it be a big installation? Would it be none of the above?
Perhaps a painting, but...
But?
Here's the thing. I feel like I have this half of me is an artist and half of me is a nurturer. Mm-hmm. And
let's do it this way. Let's try it a different way.
Okay.
You are artsy and non-profity, you know, yeah. Finland, progressive, blah, blah, blah. So if we said, let's pretend, but if I gave you $1 million and I said you have to donate it to an arts-related nonprofit, which nonprofit would you give it to?
Well, originally, I guess I've always thought that it would be something in the musical arts.
Okay.
Such as young audiences, you know, because that's my background and my aptitude.
Okay, so it would be some youth music thing.
Yeah, something like.
Pick would it be for a progressive heavy metal, encouraging that kind of thing?
No.
Classical? What would let's narrow it down. What would be? Let's create an ideal. What would that organization be that you would donate to?
It would be a broad spectrum, but not. I mean, classical, yes, it would be included, but not. It wouldn't be limited to classical.
Okay.
World.
So there are many nonprofits that advocate for youth in music. For example,
yeah.
Sure, there's music. You know, there's always a concern that music is being cut out of the curriculum because there is a focus on the fact that we graduate so many kids who are illiterate and math illiterate, so there's always music nonprofits trying to fight for music in the schools. Is that the kind of organization you want to work for?
Yes.
Okay. So let's say I was the CEO, I was the executive director of that, let's call it Music in the Schools, and I say to you, what's your first name, by the way?
Kimberly.
Kimberly, I say, Kimberly, I'll give you any job you want working for this nonprofit, Music in the Schools, as long as it makes you flower, brings out the best in you, and is authentic to who you are, but it's also practical. What would you want to do for me?
I would want to be able to teach. I would want to be able to share and influence others because through my passion. In other words, I would want to be able to sell, maybe go out into the community and talk up these programs, get parents on board, and then I'd want to be able to help develop connections, make connections between, you know, the students and whatever the musical opportunity might be.
So what I hear you saying is you would like to identify, you know, you'd work for this organization and there's all kinds of programs available. For example, I just had the privilege of spending time with the head of the Napa High School Choir, Travis Rogers, who kids, you know, die to get into. It was for 25% of all the kids at Napa High take choir because it's such a privilege to be under his tutelage. He's amazing. So you would want to work for an organization that had a collection of such programs and both go into the community and encourage, maybe speak at PTA meetings or whatever, to help them find the right kind of programs and match them up. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
I think so, yes.
Okay. So for today, my advice to you is to get off the phone. Your motivation will dissipate with every minute that passes between now, this phone call, and when you act. So I invite you to get off the phone now. Look for Bay Area nonprofits or even national nonprofits that may have a presence here in the Bay Area that deal with music in the schools. And you might even start by Googling music in the schools and the word nonprofit and make your target 5 such organizations. Then write a beautiful letter that explained that you would like to be the connector between model programs and the community. And might there be a role for you? That might be, you know, maybe in the beginning they'll make you, you know, either work as a volunteer or on a project or whatever. But that's your way into the door. That seems closer, more clear. You're a value-centric person. That's what you're about. And it seems like we need to start in your case with that. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So, again, dear listeners, you are listening to Work with Marty Nemco, and if you or someone you love has got a work-related problem, just call. It's easy. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Enacting the solution may not be so easy, but we can come up with something. We always can. There is nobody who's hopeless. End of story. Okay, 415-841-4134. And as I've been doing interspersing between the calls, I've been sharing some under-the-radar careers because that's what my listeners have been emailing me, saying when I do no guest shows, they particularly like to hear about under-the-radar careers. So another one is surveyor. You know, in the old days, they used these tripod things called, I think, theodolites or whatever, but that's long been changed. They now use GPS and other tools to identify boundaries, not just of homes, but of, you know, where the boundary for the highway, or more likely these days, the mass transit, airports, mines. You know, where are the boundaries of the mines, property? There's some rancher who's, you know, in New Mexico or whatever, fighting about property is public, it's not public. So setting about, even underwater, surveyors sometimes special. Everybody, we're in an era of specialization now, and there are surveyors who specialize in underwater. What really is the boundary of this country versus international waters? The United States is, I think, the law that says that the United States boundaries are 150 miles out. There are certain rules where, you know, that the United States has hegemony over, you know, X number of miles out, and then a lesser degree of hegemony, X plus 2 miles out, and then it's international waters. Well, somebody's got to survey that. And they're a specialist. So surveyor, kind of an under-the-radar career for those who are more visually oriented, not so people-centric. And I will give out some more in a moment, but I do want to go back to the phones. But first, I'll give out the phone number. If you or someone you love has got a work-related problem, I can usually help. 415-841-4134. That's the number here. Work with Marty Nemko. 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, I'm calling. I recently joined an early stage startup here in the Bay Area, and I was wondering if you had any input on how to not only negotiate what the appropriate salary would be, but also the equity portion of it. I mean,
yeah,
I know I know there's a range and it varies, but I feel it's tough in the startup world to understand. Yes, you're going to take maybe less pay because of the nature of it and the early stage of it, and then how does that translate into the equity that you're going to ask for, and what is the range of kind of sacrifice you make in the day?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's easier to talk about the equity piece. The truth is that, you know, equity sounds so great. We see the dollar signs and, you know, and you're going to have, you know, 50,000 shares. And boy, if it sells for, you know, $20 a share, I'm a millionaire. But the reality is that the vast majority of startups, even, you know, every startup's got a good idea. So it's not, you know, I don't care about that. But even if you, you know, even if you've got great management, the odds of a great idea turning into something that's going to go public and the share price is going to be high and you're going to be around long enough to be able to exercise your options, you know, you're really almost talking lottery odds. So I would, the one certainly fairly standard advice is don't sacrifice, if money matters at all, don't sacrifice, you know, pay work for crap wages, you know, because they're giving you, you know, 4% of the company. That tends to be very risky unless you're, if really this is venture funded and they've got really blue chippers who have had a number of successful startups in the past that have gone public, then it's different. But if it's not like that, if it's just, you know, three or four smart men and women with a good idea and they don't really have a, you know, they have no experience running a business, even if the idea is great, I'd say don't get sucked into the equity piece. What's your reaction to that, first of all?
My reaction is, I would agree, but I think this is a unique case where we've already received $1 million series investment, which makes me feel
you're cutting out
a bit more. Can you hear me?
Now I can.
Okay, I said I would agree, but I do feel this is one of those instances. For example, we've already received pretty significant venture funding in the low millions, and so it makes me want to be somewhat invested in that potential.
Mm-hmm. As I said, I was talking about the typical one, but I said if the venture funds have invested money, and in fact, but whether the venture funds do or not, one of the things that I've learned over the years, it's all about the team. How awesome, literally, and that word is used hyperbolically, but in order in this incredibly tough space, the whole world of high tech, where you've got the smartest, most driven people in the world, are the people who are running the show, the one or two or three people who are at the center of the thing, are they rock stars? Are they really amazing?
Are you asking me or is it?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
I definitely would say I believe in the team. I believe that the people I'm working with are, they really walk that cliff edge between what their strengths are and what their past experiences have built them to be, and also the unknown of continuing to push yourself into unknown territory. And I do feel very confident in the team.
Okay. So now I want to, in terms of how much to ask, we'll get to salary and equity. So what kind of work, how many people are in the company right now, and what kind of work are you going to be doing for them?
I'm doing operations. It's a pretty operations logistics heavy startup, and other than the co-founders, there's about 5-6 employees.
Okay. Now, operations normally kicks in after you've got a lot of product. When it's a startup, they're usually not. Is this a service business or a product business?
It's a service business.
Okay. Is it a technology service business or no?
Yes.
Okay. And so what does operations mean? I want to get a sense of the scope of your work before I can talk about what it should pay.
It means, I'm trying to think of how to describe it, while still remaining vague.
I don't know if you have to be, do you have to be vague? Why do you have to be vague?
I prefer to keep it somewhat private.
Okay, go ahead.
For private sake. It entails,
you're cutting out. I can't hear you. What I think I'm going to ask you to do, because you're intermittently doing this so long it's difficult to listen for my listeners, if you have a landline or something better or move to a place where the sound quality is good, why don't you call back, because you're cutting out.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. The problem is with startups in general, operations is such a vague term. When he's wanting to hold it close to the vest, it's very hard for me to give any kind of useful advice. There are people who are, quote, in operations. If they're providing some technology customs, some service, maybe, typically the kind of services that are provided or, customer service or outsourcing programming to developing nations, it depends on how complex what he's doing is, how rare his skill set is. If his skill set is rare, in other words, you've got to be an amazing Ruby on Rails programmer and you've got to really understand supply chain software and all that other stuff, yeah, then he can, demand six figures. But if he's basically just being a common sense guy who's, kind of doing it on the fly, and he's, then his salary may be more like $60,000. It varies. And in terms of percentage of the business, if it's a 5 or 6 person business, apparently the stock will seem to have some potential, stock will have some value, the founders are going to want to get most of it. So as employee number 5 or 6 who's an operations guy, my intuition, if somebody put a gun to my head, is that probably maybe 5% of the company in stock might be a reasonable, ask for 10, take 5. Anyway, those are a few thoughts, maybe generalizable to you or your situation. Speaking of your situation, if you would like me to help address your specific situation, anything related to work, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco for a 3-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And in the meantime, we're going to go back to some under-the-radar careers that I like to talk about. There are a lot of people in this world who surprisingly like a job blowing things up. The kind of person who as a child may have liked, building something and then blowing it up or whatever. Well, there's actually a career for that, and it even doesn't take much time. It's called Unexploded Ordnance Technician. This is, I think the training is just a few months, and you're there to go and, look at a potential bomb and determine whether it's dangerous or not. And if it's not, and the best thing to do is blow it up, you blow it up with, plastic explosives or whatever they use. So certainly an under-the-radar career. Another one is court stenographer. I have a little egg on my face. Probably about 10 years ago, I discouraged, I remember a caller calling in a show and asking if she should go into court reporting. And I said, we're already starting to get the automated translation software, naturally speaking, drag and dictate. They were, IBM had one via voice. And so I figured that by the time you finish training, which is 3 or 4 years, the translation software would replace it. I was wrong. Apparently, the job market for court stenographers, court reporters remains good. And because we are in an era where we are paying a great deal attention to society's have-nots, which include the disabled, there is a tremendous need for captioners. So people who are court reporters use the same skills in recordings what's being said on a TV show or whatever, and captioning. The law is requiring a tremendous amount, like a captioning for the deaf, for example. So, as I said, though, 3-year training, but kind of an under-the-radar career that I would have thought was dead is not dead. Okay, another one. I like talking about these allied health careers that are not so obvious. We all know about doctor, nurse, and we also know at this point about nurse practitioner and physician assistant. But there are a number of other assistant jobs in healthcare that are growing because we're now insuring millions of more people under the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it. So they're trying to control costs. There aren't enough human beings who are healthcare providers to provide quality care. So, for example, and this is the one I want to mention today, which is anesthesiology assistant, both before the operation, actually during the operation, I don't know about afterwards. You're working alongside an anesthesiologist, or, and I don't know the rules or what really happens in practice, but sometimes the anesthesiologist, you know, is either not in there or whatever, but you have an important job. And I certainly don't mean to say I know that I think the anesthesiologist is required to actually be in the room at the time. Not sure. But the beauty of it is, it's not, you know, to be an anesthesiologist is 4 years of hard science college. You've got medical school. You've got residencies, internships. It's forever. Whereas to be an anesthesiology assistant, and you, by the way, you'll make 6 figures, and it's totally in demand. It's only a bachelor's degree, kind of a pre-med like bachelor's degree, and a 2-year master's program. So it's a nice under the radar career. There's a parallel in the area of radiology. You know, there's radiologists, or there's another long medical training program, but a radiologist assistant who is doing very similar work under the supervision of a radiologist can also make 6 figures. Maybe not the $300,000 a year that the anesthesiologist and radiologist make, but the assistant can make 6 figures, and that's good enough to live a decent lifestyle. Anyway, I'll give out the phone number one more time. If you or someone you love has got a work-related problem, I invite you to call for a 3-minute workover. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko at KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And back to the phones. It is your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi. I'm getting close to retirement age. In fact, I pretty much am retirement age, but I'm worried, and I could retire, but I'm worried about what I'll do with myself after retirement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a lot of hobbies or anything, and you hear all stories about people that retire and die.
Right.
So
let's play with that. So let's for the, you know, I've helped, you know, most of the calls are about getting a job, but let's plan your retirement. Let's assume you do retire, but we don't want you bored and, you know, just you feel useless and then you die. We don't want you dying. So let's start about, let me give you a couple of choice questions. Does your intuition tell you that you'd like to spend some time in which one or more of the following? Either in a hobby, in volunteer work, or in some kind of a self-employed business?
Volunteer work, I think.
Okay, great. So I'm going to ask you the same question I asked the previous caller. Let's say I gave you $1 million, and I said you had to donate it to one or more entities. I'm deliberately using the vague word entities. What one, two, or three entities would you give the money away to?
Preschool education would be one, the first one that pops into my mind. The second one would be sort of prisoner rights.
Okay. I want to ask a question about that. I've always been puzzled by the prisoner rights issue. You know, there are millions and millions and millions of causes where people, through no fault of their own, have bad luck. They were born with a disease, or they were victims of crime, or, like education. Education causes, literacy causes. It would seem like, not that prisoners shouldn't have rights and advocates, but it would seem of all the causes, to champion for them feels, I wonder what makes you feel that is, of all the charities that are out there, all the causes, why is that the cause that you would champion, you would pick?
Well, I hear these stories that that people now, prisoners now, are put into long-term or put into isolation, solitary confinement on a long term, and they're actually driven crazy by it. And it just seems it seems to me that someday we're going to look back on this period and wonder how could we have been so cruel. And it just seems like one of those societal things to me that needs to be rectified.
All right, so let's play with that. Let's start with the prisoner rights, then we'll do the preschool thing. So let's say I was the executive director of the Sentencing Project. It's one of the leading anti-death penalty and prisoner rights groups. And I say, what's your first name, by the way?
Matt.
Matt. So, Matt, I say, I'll give you any job you want, but it's volunteer, but you can do anything you want as long as it brings out the best in you and helps the cause of prisoner rights. What would you want to do for me?
I think I would want it's hard to say. I mean, what I would want to happen is that solitary confinement be done away with.
Now, so, I mean, are you going to be the writer? Are you going to write grant proposals? Are you going to go out and be a lobbyist? Are you going to be a fundraiser? Are you going to be the accountant who works there? What would be your role, given who you are, given your abilities?
Right.
What would be the role?
I think lobbyist, and perhaps more on the legal side.
Okay. So, are you a lawyer?
Yes.
Okay, great. So if I said that your job was to be a researcher, to take some little, you're excited about this issue, first of all, I would encourage you to, every especially on emotional issues and nonprofit issues, there truth can sometimes be exaggerated in the service of a larger cause. Frankly, I've spoken to many people who are very passionate about one cause or another, and they will stretch the truth because they believe the larger good is to get people really interested.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd first verify the extent to which the sense is correct, that people are being, in 2014, putting in long-term solitary confinement, driving them crazy. First of all, verify that. I think that's a reasonable thing to ask you to do. But if assuming that you're correct, then as a lawyer, your highest and best use coming in as the outside, they're not going to make you the lobbyist going to Capitol Hill or Sacramento, but they may have you be a researcher and write a brief that takes some aspect of this and write a thorough review of the data so that the lobbyist who's going to go to Sacramento or whatever and propose legislation would have strong background. Would you like doing that?
Yes.
Okay. So my engineer, board operator, Joanne Marr, came up with a couple of other suggestions. So I'm curious whether you would rather do that or either of these two. So would you rather be somebody who is essentially writing briefs on some aspect of prisoner rights, or would you rather tutor in San Quentin?
Actually, both of those sound interesting to me.
Great. So those are two sides. You've got a people side then and a more word and intellectual side.
Right.
So let's say that those are two components to at least investigate. I understand that there are courses taught at San Quentin, and they want tutors specifically for that. So we will write down a couple of things now. We've got you're going to be writing these briefs potentially, or at least proposing to. You can never, ever guess. You never know which one of these prisoner rights organizations are going to say yes to you. So it's a numbers game. So the deal is to make a list of 10 of these prisoner rights organizations and write a nice letter to them explaining that you're concerned about this issue or that issue, and whether it is the long-term confinement, if that's real or not, or other. I'm sure there's millions of other prisoner rights issues.
Right.
And saying that you are interested in as a lawyer, in writing legal briefs. If you send 10 such letters to the executive director or their head of communications, which is what lobbying is, the odds are, especially as a volunteer, the price is certainly right. The odds are pretty good that you're going to get something. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, great. There's a website that my board operator, she's really an expert in this whole prison reform area. There's a website called prisonuniversityproject.org, which I believe is related to this.
Okay.
Okay. Well, and then on the preschool side, before I let you go, what would you want to do in the service of preschool that would leverage your best skills?
there I was thinking, on that side, I was thinking more of sort of volunteering to actually attend a school and just be an adult male that was whatever helping the teachers.
It's an interesting point because certainly preschool is 99% women. There's always, you know, again, the media hypes the 1 or 2% of guys who have raped or abused children. Of course, most men are good people. They would never do that. But there's certainly a shortage of male role models in early childhood education. So yes, that might be a nice little spice to add. You know, there are very few people who want, especially older men. I don't know if it's estrogen or environment or whatever, but there are very few older men who want to spend, you know, lots of hours dealing with, you know, infants and preschoolers.
And nor do I. It would definitely have to be limited.
Right. But as we're creating a tapestry here, a patchwork quilt, if you will. So maybe, a couple of hours a week of seeing a good male role model before you lose your patience. Plus, you know, you're doing a little of that with a little bit of some writing on behalf of some prisoner rights issues. And a little tutoring of prisoners may give you a nice mix of things to contemplate in your retirement. How are you feeling about that?
That actually, it sounds good to me. I was more concerned with just, I have this worry that that I'll retire and then just won't get out of bed. That, yes, I know I want to do these sorts of things, but right now what keeps me getting up is that I have to be at work at 8 o'clock and...
Got it. So, a couple of things. If motivation is an issue, of course, then, you know, it is very important to ask for what you want in the work world, whether it's volunteer or paid. By saying something like, you know, you have the skills and you can do this, but you do better with some structure.
Right.
So, let's say you're going to be writing this report on the long-term, the legal basis for questioning the treatment of prisoners in solitary confinement, that you're going to write this report, create a bunch of little milestones and say, you know, you, Mr. Boss or Ms. Boss, are going to be happier with me if we create a bunch of milestones and I have to report to you every day or every week or whatever on what I've done and whether I met these milestones. Might that help you get out of bed?
Yes, I think it would.
Okay. Well, I'll quit while I'm ahead, and I thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemko. And you also don't need to retire at once. You know, sometimes it's possible to do a phased retirement. So if you're working 5 days a week now, try go down to 4, go down to 3, replace some of that standard law work that you're doing with some of this little by little. So it's, you know, you're feeling like you're going in the right direction. You may decide you want to work 1 or 2 days a week for pay, continuing as a lawyer, and then fill in with the other stuff. Don't need to go whole hog.
Right. Okay, thanks, Marty. I really appreciate it, and I really enjoy your show.
I'm glad you do. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you.
Okay, before I go back to the phones, let me continue to offer another couple of under-the-radar careers, and then we do have calls. We'll go back to the phone in just a minute. This is a really under-the-radar one. It's an embalmer. Unfortunately, it's one of death and taxes are the two inevitables, and the embalmer's job is to prepare dead bodies for viewing at a funeral. And it's certainly not for everyone, but for the right person, it can be. Don't groan at me. It can be a career to die for. Okay. Anyway, let me do one more before we go back to the phones. I've talked about this before, but I really like it. A lot of people like the prestige. People chase prestige all the time. And they like the idea of being called doctor. And there's a 3-year path to being a doctor, which is audiologist. And not only do you get to be a doctor, but as older people get older, they need hearing aids. And we have the aging boomers. And the technology is getting ever better. Hearing aids, I understand, suck. And but they're rapidly improving, and so people who have hearing aids will likely want to replace them with something that has less background noise or whatever the problems are there with hearing aids. So, great career, a little more under the radar for somebody who wants to be a doctor. They don't normally think about audiologist. So now we'll go back to the phones, but first let me give out the phone number. If you or someone you love could use some career help, that's what I do here on this show. I'm in my 25th year of doing this, still love it as much as ever, and I want to help you. Maybe those 25 years and 4,500 career counseling clients may inform what I do to try to help you on the phone. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. It is your turn on the air. How can I help?
You're talking to me?
I am.
Hi. I have what may seem like a peculiar problem. I don't want to be promoted.
Okay.
In my job.
Great. The Peter principle is such that people rise to their level of incompetence and they're happy where they are. Up is not the only way. You couldn't have a bigger fan of that than me. Continue.
I'm apparently good enough at what I do that I'm being given more responsibility, which is tantamount to a promotion. There isn't sort of formal promotions in this particular organization. I'm succeeding at those, but I'm feeling that it's risky for me to fly too high, and the risk of at some point failing and no longer having my position. And I'm at of a mindset and an age where I'm happy with what I'm doing.
Terrific. So this is the implication here is that it's out of your control, but it's in your control. If you, when you are given another level of responsibility or they want to promote you, it is perfectly appropriate to say something like, I know it's not the American way. The American way is to, get promoted higher, faster, more money, whatever. But, I'm not that kind of guy, and I'm getting a little older, and I realize that I love doing what I do, and I'm pleased that you feel I'm adding enough value that you want to promote me, but I'd like to set some boundaries on things. I'd like to keep it at this level. I'd like to do that. Asking for what you want, as long as it's ethical, is one of the most foundational and valuable practices you can undertake. Is that realistic or no?
Well, there's always, personalities involved, right? Every organization has its own culture.
Yep.
And my sense is, for what it's worth, I'm approaching 60.
Yep.
So, and I went through a period of unemployment, which I think was somewhat attributable to my age when I had gotten laid off from a job. And I don't want to risk losing this one. So it's a tech company. It's a website. There are a lot of very, very intelligent people there, a lot of engineers. It's very engineer heavy, and I'm not an engineer. And my fear is the risk that the way people think in general, because it is heavily engineering, is that you step up to the plate and you solve the problem or go elsewhere, essentially, because
got it. So,
we have to reinvent things.
Got it. So the question really is, anything can happen, but statistically, if they are liking you enough, doing what you are doing, that they keep giving you more and more and more responsibility, the statistical probability of you setting some boundaries on that and then them firing you is very small. I can't guarantee it. Think crazy things happen. But I think if you don't do it, then you are with 100% certitude getting into more work than you want. So, it's easier said than done, but the risk-reward ratio is definitely in favor of you're not going to say, I'm burned out, dude, I'm tired, not that. Just say, I'm excited about what I do. I feel really good about it. I feel like this is kind of what I was meant to do. Are you comfortable with me setting boundaries that around this work and this is what I'm going to do rather than strive for promotion? I think I'll ask back to you. If you ask it that way, do you think there's a high probability you can get fired?
No. In general, I think people, it's a very ethical organization, and that's one of the reasons why I'm very happy with it. And I consider them, the management people, to be very right-thinking. So I don't think firing so much as being essentially isolated because you're not willing to play on the same level as them, which means step up. So what I guess what I'm asking from you, which is why I called, is I'm not the kind of person that says no. People ask me to do something, ask me to do more, ask me to do better. I manage to do it somehow to the point where I think I become overloaded, yet still seem to succeed and get things done.
Right, we're going over the same material. I got it. And my judgment
is I can't pay out.
Yeah, my judgment is based on is that of course many of us are pleased, we're pleasers, we are afraid of getting fired, but from what I'm hearing, given that you're a fair-haired boy who's getting more and more responsibility, and I think that it's worth the risk of tactfully saying you're not looking for more promotions. Not everybody moves up. In fact, when I was a consultant to Genentech, which by the way, congratulations, Genentech was rated the number one best place to work among large companies. When I worked for there, one of the things they were really interested in, I made a series of videos for them. or audios. And one of the things they really like when I propose topics is that topic of up isn't the only way. They want a lot of people who are not just scrambling to get to the top. They need a certain number of worker bees. So my best take, my best shot is tactfully ask.
Okay. Well, that's, like I say, what I was thinking from you is, how can I say no? And I guess you've given me your best advice, so I appreciate it.
I have told you exactly how I would say no. I would say I like my job. I feel really good about it. I'm not necessarily trying to be promoted. And it's tempting to just say yes, yes, yes. But that's just ultimately not in my interest or in yours. And I think that given that you're a fair-haired boy with these guys, I think your risk of getting fired is low. Anyway, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Oh, hi. I was just wanting to ask to be connected with the previous caller. I represent a charity here in Berkeley, California, that has run into the phenomenon of economic discrimination before the law. That is to say, in civil cases, when you need a lawyer to represent and you can't afford it, you may well be out and you may waste a lot of time trying to be your own lawyer and slip up. So.
Well, we don't keep the names of the phone numbers of people, but if you would give your name and phone number, Joanne, should we do it on the air or should we do it off the air? Off the air. Just stay on the line. On the air. Okay. So give your name and phone number. If the guy is still listening, he can call you. What's the name of the organization, your name and phone number?
It's called the Star Alliance Foundation for All. We're right here in Berkeley at 510-848-1818.
Okay, 1818, and this is a prisoner rights organization?
No, but there's an overlap there. We work in peace education, and it would be just wonderful at low cost and high yield to inspire prisoners to a better life. And we have our own form of kind of being incarcerated economically that we could really use the help, and other volunteers are welcome too.
Okay. Well, I'm very happy that you called, and hopefully he was listening, and we'll give you a call.
Well, thank you, Marty, and thank you for your work.
I do my best. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Take care. You know, the prisoners, you know, I do feel bad about this aspect of prisoner rights. This is, we all have our different aspects of issues that we care about. It is, you know, let's say you were a screw-up at age 20, and you did all kinds of bad things, and you were in prison, and now you're 24, 25. It is so hard to get hired if you're an ex-felon. And so the advice I love to give to kind of break through that, and I've said this kind of thing before on the air, but it's relevant given we've been talking prisoner issues. I believe in radical honesty. I believe, frankly, I believe that when everybody, and some people hate me because I'm so damn honest, but I would, if I were trying to get a job and I had just been, I was an ex-felon, let's say I was a gangbanger and I robbed, you know, people's homes, and I, you know, even assaulted somebody, whatever, horrible record, right? And so now I'm 28 years old. They gave me 8 years or whatever, and I'm finally, you know, I'm out, or I'm on probation or whatever, and I want to get a job. My way would be, first of all, would be to simply apply for jobs at the very bottom end, but also contact bottom end employers who aren't advertising a job and write a letter like this. Dear Mr. Whatever, you're probably going to be tempted to throw this letter in the trash because I'm an ex-felon, a bad one. I did armed robbery. I did this. I just came out of San Quentin. And I suspect that probably every ex-felon says, I've learned my lesson and all that, and you probably won't believe me, but I can only tell you my truth. I'm sick and tired of being a jerk. And so I'd rather now make $10 an hour, honestly, than $1,000 an hour stealing from somebody. So, and I'm willing to work my way from the bottom. I'm willing to load boxes. I'm willing to be a janitor. I need to get something on my resume other than jerk. And so if by any chance somebody may have given you a chance when, you know, you screwed up, I would love to be given at least the opportunity to talk with you, and maybe you'll feel good enough about me to give me a trial. I'm willing to work for, you know, on a substitute basis for a few hours if needed to try me out. So hoping against the odds to hear from you. Now, it is my belief that if you send 10 or 20 of those letters to warehouse managers, to janitorial services, to whatever, that one of them is going to talk to you, And so, and that's in the worst darn case. And so that's my, frankly, that's my best advice for ex-offenders. So let me, before we go back to the phones, let me give another under-the-radar career. Purchasing agent. There's a lot of people who like to buy. You're not going to be buying, you know, designer label clothing, but you're going to be buying machinery and equipment and tools and parts and supplies for an organization either to use itself or to resell. It's something that people don't think about. They call it supply chain a lot of the times now, but being a purchasing agent is kind of a fun job. You know, you got to have an eye for a bargain. You got to be thorough. You got to, you know, it's not just about price. It's about delivery. It's about quality. It's about import duties and all the rest of it. Nice under the radar career. So let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello, it's you.
Hi, it's Olivia.
Yes, hi.
Hi, hi. Well, so I had my own business for a number of years that was really exciting and really fun. And we sold the business, my partners and I, in 2010. And since then, I've done some interesting consulting work, some really interesting projects. But I really want to sink my teeth into something big and meaningful. I was originally a designer, and then I've always been concerned about sustainability, so I stopped being a designer in the interest of creating a triple bottom line business so that it would be sustainable.
People, and, planet, profits, for those who don't know what that means. Continue.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so the business was fantastic, and we had a fantastic team, and it was really like all this great work we were doing. And since I've left, I really haven't found the kind of work I want to do. I haven't found my place.
Great. And it's just, let me try to ask you. You know what the most interesting word you said so far in the whole conversation is?
What's that?
Big. You want to do something big. So
I do.
Let's play. Right. So let's play with finding the biggest thing you could do. So
okay.
Would it be in the design space, or would it be in the sustainability space, or neither?
It would be in sustainability. I'd like to use my design skills and my sort of HR happy team management skills.
Okay, great. And do you picture yourself doing this self-employed for a nonprofit or a government agency or company?
I'm interested in the intersection of for-profit and nonprofit. I would love to start something on my own. I don't have the capital to necessarily do that. So I could either, you know, create something myself or go into an organization. I wouldn't want it to be too big a corporation.
Okay, so let's say you say the interface between corporations and nonprofits, that's normally the foundation. Would you like to work for a corporate foundation that's doing its, you know, good works, either for marketing reasons or because they really want to be good folks?
Sure, that would be one of, that's one of the avenues I've pursued, yeah.
Okay, and you've pursued it and it hasn't worked. Would it be a good use of our time for me to try to come up with a great pitch that might work better with the foundations than you've previously done, or does that feel like you've exhausted that area?
No, I don't feel like I've exhausted it. Yeah, I think pitching would be relevant.
Okay, so I would say the following. There are certainly many, many large companies now have already got all these kind of, you know, environmental teams doing audits and making sure their buildings are sustainable and green. But I think the smaller companies are not quite as good at that, and they can't quite afford it. What if I said that I want you, perhaps with a partner, to, and I'm changing my mind as I'm going along here,
okay,
but that you
okay.
were to go to small to mid-sized companies and
yeah.
say that you are interested in helping design a cost-effective approach to environmental sustainability of their facilities, everything from the way they recycle to the way they pollute to any building they're doing, to lighting, to whatever. Does that excite you or not really?
Not so much, because I feel it's really saturated, that yeah. industry, and
yeah.
There
You're
are
right.
people who have very targeted training.
You're right. What's your special expertise? You're right. Good point.
My special expertise is in building, brand building, and in and design at every sort of at every level. So from product to organizational design and everything in between. And then, building happy teams, building high-functioning, really successful teams, and making people feel good, bringing their best selves to their work environment and to the project.
Okay. So it's sounding like, now tell me if this, it doesn't feel big enough, but it really, when you say what you just described, it sounds like you're working for a pretty small company or a nonprofit where you're going to have to wear many hats, because you want to be doing both the design, the HR part. What if I said you really should be focusing on some small companies that are in growth mode. Like, for example, right now I just got a look at the best places to look, 2014 from the San Francisco Business Times. These are places where all of the employees say it was a good place to work. So I'm going to flip to they have it divided by small companies and large companies. So I'm going to go to the small companies here and list just a few. So these are places that are big enough to have somebody like you, but small enough to still want somebody who's can do a little of everything. So this is for 51 to 100 employees. These are companies you've probably never heard of, most of them. Pernix Data, but let's look at the who are more like MyFitnessPal, Innotus, which makes cloud-based software. Let's see if I can find something that's more likely to have a crunchy-ish feel. Here, the Alzheimer's Association. Now, the Alzheimer's Association was rated the 10th best place to work in the Bay Area in an organization that's 51 to 100 employees. And I happen to know they are a dog-friendly place. They allow doggies. And so isn't it possible that if you wrote a letter to them and say, you've got these skills in design, in HR, in creating happy teams, and whatever, that might be a place that is a great place to work and might be interested in your combination of skill sets. How does that feel?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would want to know that there was a sustainability angle that I could help promote as well, you know?
Well, no, but that's where every organization, you don't know up front, but that's where you have the conversation,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you say something about, let's take a look at what's, you know, what it is, let me walk through your place. Let's talk about it and let's see, you know, sustainability, you know, you could be talking about people's sustainability of their lives, quality of life stuff, typical HR stuff. I don't know. Yeah. The goal is to have conversations, but it sounds like you're a generalist. You've got a variety of little skill sets, not so little, but a variety of skill sets that you want to incorporate. That means small company.
Okay, yeah.
Makes sense?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that makes more sense than the foundations. It felt like a little bit of an unrealistic reach for me to tell you to go to the foundations, because those are pretty coveted jobs, and I just have this intuition that you could still make it big. I guess the one thing I do want to say is you could make that job little or big. If you go in there and think like a CEO and say, what are the best, coolest design concepts I could bring? What are the most sustainable ideas? What is the most amazing way I could build teams better here? If you think like giant, think big, you could take even what is seen as a modest job and turn it into something bigger. Make sense?
Sure. Yeah.
All right.
Can I ask you one follow-up?
No, unfortunately not. The show is over. We're out of time.
Okay.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for calling. You can feel free to call back, though, next time.
Okay.
Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco. That is the show for this week. My thanks to my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, to all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. It'll be a really good show. My wife, Barbara Nemco, and I are going to kick around Harvard Business Review's 10 must-reads on leadership. There's a million things on leadership, and most of it is redundant. But this is great stuff, the very best stuff out of Harvard Business Review's 10 must-reads, and we will kick them around pro and con and so on and so forth. Anyway, until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.